It does not have to have a dessert. Desserts are something added by the local school system in the hopes of getting more children to participate in the diet. So we have not for years required, and I think never has it been required, and the federal funds don't pay for the dessert. That generally comes in at the desire of the school board. There are other things we're doing. Right now, we are re-examining whether or not to allow high-sugared cereals to be among those that can be purchased with the WIC vouchers. At the present time, all those horrible high-sugar cereals are available in the WIC program, and we're examining whether that should continue to be the case. It's a serious problem because if you take all the high-sugared cereals out of the WIC program, you reduce the number of ready-to-eat breakfast cereals to a very small number. We have proposed to remove from the school breakfast program what I have always referred to as the fortified Twinkie, which is called a formulated fruit grain product, and it looks an awful lot like a Hostess Twinkie, but it's called Astro Food or something like that, and it's a high sugar, high fat cupcake shot full of vitamins, and it was allowed by the last group to be used in the breakfast program as a substitute for an ordinary breakfast in the hopes that more schools would come into the school breakfast program. Schools that didn't have facilities to serve a regular breakfast. Of course, what we discovered was that it didn't bring new schools in. It just gave all the schools that had the equipment to fix an ordinary breakfast an excuse not to do it and to let the kids eat this highly sugared, high-fat product. And we propose to remove that now from the school breakfast. We have something like 500 comments on that proposal. 25 of them were opposed. They were from the companies that made those things. But we're going through and we're going to try to find ways to reduce salt in the added salt in the products that we purchase for the school lunch program. You just have to go through and look at all of these things, and it is distressing to see how many of these anomalies in terms of good health got built in the school lunch program, which is a several billion-dollar a year program to encourage good nutrition. And I can't think of any reason why the government, the taxpayers' money, should be used and not address the issue of encouraging good nutrition through the school lunch program. Yes, ma'am. Let me explain. The Congress passed recently legislation that provides an entitlement of 50 cents per child per year, per school child per year, to go for nutrition education. Next year, that would be about $26 million in new money for nutrition education, and that's on top of existing funds, and it will be administered by the Department of Agriculture, by the Food and Nutrition Service, except that it will be in form of grants to states. And I have real reservations about it. I think Congress, I couldn't be more in favor of nutrition education, but I also think one of these days we will get past the point where you resolve every problem by saying, throw 50 cents per student per year at it, and that's all that has to be done. There was no planning for the use of that money, and it was allocated, and now we're frantically trying to plan some ways so that it won't be just frittered off a little bit here and a little bit there, and 5 years from now have people say, we told you it wouldn't work. We're going to try, but we're trying to structure all of our nutrition education programs as we begin building them in with large evaluation components, so at the end of any year you can go back and say, it worked, it didn't work. And as you know, it's very hard to evaluate nutrition education. It's very hard to change people's diets, and it's very hard to find out if you've changed their diets if you did. You said you had a second question. I'll take it.
Well, I saw another subject, but there's somebody else who wants to do the school lunch and school breakfast program. I just like to point out, in my home ec class, they taught us how to make baked grapefruit with sugar on it and how to make cinnamon toast. Now, that was the only thing I learned at home ec. That was, they taught us all of that stuff about nutrition,
and a maraschino cherry on the top. Yeah. I took that course, too. It's going to be a while before you see change in those areas. People who teach home economics, like people who teach any other subject, go along year by year doing fairly much the same things, and we need some teacher education. There was a question back in the back of the room. Okay.
But I was wondering that, I don't know if you're, the Department of Agriculture monitors the food stamps on their program, and there's a regulation that for a person that is receiving welfare or some other type of supplemental income, if their children or any of their family is involved in programs that the government is also subsidizing, say schooling, say special schooling, recreation, early childhood education, things like this. And that mother is a non-working mother and is in the home. Those activities, even though that mother never receives the dollar, are counted as credit on her income. So, for instance, if that mother is earning $200,
not under the new law. No, it won't go into effect until July 1 of 1978, but we were taken to court for having accounted HUD rent supplement funds as income, and that case was not me, not us, the last group, you know. At the Department of Agriculture, there really truly is, you know, Earl Butz's era, and then there's Jimmy Carter's era. And we lost that case, and so rent supplement payments can't be counted that way. But the nature of the decision only covered the rent supplement payments. The new law says no vendor payments shall be counted as income in establishing the income for school, for food stamp eligibility, because obviously it's impossible to calculate those in any real fashion. We shared your concern about it. Yes, ma'am. Well, we almost have a matriarchy these days, certainly in contrast to what it was before. There was a woman assistant secretary of agriculture in 1950. Well, no, Dorothy Jacobson was there under Orville Freeman sometime in 1962. I think that's the only time. Was there one before?
That's the only assistant. We had one
the deputy. Okay. There are five assistant secretaries of agriculture. One of them's a woman. There's one deputy assistant secretary, and the assistant secretary for administration, I'm sorry, two are women. The assistant secretary for administration is also a woman, and the general counsel is a woman. A lot of women have been brought in at appointee level jobs. The new head of the Agricultural Marketing Service is a woman. The Marjorie Hart, who's the federal women's coordinator for the departments here and can speak to this more thoroughly, in the Food and Nutrition Service, I think the number of women in grades 13 and above has gone from 12 to 25 in 7 months. But it's all, those are the levels where you can bring women in as political appointees. The serious problem is trying to get women into the high level jobs, those 14 and above, via the Civil Service Commission. It's just almost impossible to do. You ask for a list of people, and it comes back because of the veterans preference system, and everybody on it's a man. What's really serious is I don't even know an effective way to attack that. The veterans preference system, you might say that pass a law that says that that only applies through your first two jobs or your first job in the system rather than having it go with you all the way up the ladder. But it's a long, hard thing to change. It's going to be 15 years. That of hard work to get that to change, and I'm unless the government goes on a very specific recruiting system to bring women in at grade 13 and above in civil service positions and exempts those jobs somehow from the veterans preference system. Yes, ma'am. I don't suspect very many of the people on the Agriculture Committee sent women up. The president's doing, we're doing very well in the Schedule C jobs. But when we leave, when Jimmy Carter leaves, I go, Sarah Weddington goes, Henrietta MacArthur goes. If the next group doesn't want to bring women in, there won't be any there. But that's even not the key point. The key point is you're not creating within the professional civil service women at grades 14 through 18, or 14 through 17, since a lot of the 18 jobs are political appointees. I don't have an answer to the problem, and I don't think that it can be resolved without some changes in legislation. And you go after that veterans preference, and I'm telling you, it's the biggest hornet's nest I ever stirred in my life the first time I suggested that. Yes, ma'am. It is.
Is that going to be something that's just going to be used to satisfy an action plan?
I'm gonna try to make sure that it's not. I've had discussions with both Bob Angelotti, the head of the Food Safety and Quality Service, and Lou Strauss of the Food and Nutrition Service. And the Food and Nutrition Service is by far the best within the Department of Agriculture on all kinds of equal employment opportunity hiring. Food Safety and Quality Service has not been good, and it's inexcusable. There has a lot of veterinarians, and there are a lot of women who are veterinarians. And we have chatted extensively about it. I have been able to bring a couple of women in there as political appointees. I hope that program will be. I'll be watching it, and if you think it's not, you let me know. I didn't know that that was a problem, except that I never see any women in the Food Safety and Quality Service anywhere. That's okay. They don't think I'm qualified to be a system secretary. That's right. Will you write me a letter about that? Okay. Thank you. I'd appreciate it, because then you can put your name on or off regardless of you know, either way you're more comfortable, and I'll take it up with the leadership there. Yes, ma'am. Well, I tend to agree with you, and I've made my position on that issue known to the president, and I haven't changed his mind. I would hope, and I think that it's one of the reasons why we can ill afford not to expand the WIC program, that a government that won't pay for abortions has some obligation to assist those women who can't by themselves get through a pregnancy and deliver a healthy child. And that's why I think the WIC program is so terribly important, particularly now. But I, you know, in answer to your other question, we're doing outreach on the WIC program, and I'm afraid that there's some chance that the lack of federal funding for abortions will discourage women from going into those prenatal health clinics, and I think we're going to have to work very hard to make sure that doesn't happen. Yes, ma'am. Sure.
Generally, the Department of Agriculture saying, for example, beef is super plentiful. We've really got a lot of beef. You know, push beef and eat more meat. If you're going to be a good American, basically help your farmer out, eat more meat so they'll have a better market. About the same week, there are things the American Heart Association, eat less meat because, you know, it's less possible. There's something from another group that just eat less meat because it uses up less grain, which makes,
Yeah, but that one really is kind of bogus, really. They don't feed the beef grain because it's going to feed the people in Bangladesh. It doesn't happen that way. There are a lot of other reasons not to make fat cattle, but that's not one of them. Yeah, right now we're having a little problem about nitrites and the hot dogs and then the bacon that is doing the same thing. But I don't find that conflict arises very often. And to the extent that it does, we just deal with it on a one-at-a-time basis. A couple of years ago, there was a large surplus of sweet potatoes, and obviously the sweet potato folks wanted us to buy a lot of sweet potatoes for the school lunch program. And kids aren't crazy about sweet potatoes. You know, southern kids, yes, but rest of the world, no. And there are some pressures. I don't find those difficult to balance off. Sweet potatoes are nutritious. You know, you can help the school system. One of the reasons that the school lunch program's in the Department of Agriculture is that it was originally a surplus removal program. We're trying to move it so that it continues to have a support the market role. That shouldn't be inconsistent with providing nutritious food to students. There are a lot of things we can do. Eat less meat is less important than eating lean meat. Now we have complete control over the percentage of fat in the meat that we buy for the school lunch program. We can call for less fat in the hamburger. We have government regulations out of the Food Safety and Quality Service that set the percentage, at maximum percentage of fat allowable in a hot dog. It's 30%. If we think too much fat in the diet's a problem, we can always revise those regulations and reduce the amount of fat in a hot dog down from 30%. And, of course, probably be my last act at the Department of Agriculture. But the government encourages certain things. We encourage the feeding of cattle by changing the grade standards so that it's harder to qualify for prime or choice. I didn't like the last grading system that came in, but it did have the virtue of discouraging quite as much feeding. It encouraged you could qualify for choice at a lower level of marbling, and that encourages less feeding. So that there are all sorts of things that we can do if we go and look at all the existing regulations on a kind of one-at-a-time basis to try to rationalize the system to build into the food supply what's good for the folk as well as what's good for the processors. I think that the conflict generally arises between the needs of the food processor and the needs of the consumer rather than between the needs of the producer and the needs of the consumer. Not always, but in the cases that I've had to deal with since I've been there, that has generally been it. Nitrite and bacon gives it a distinctive taste and color. It also helps prevent the formation of botulism. You can get the taste and color with very low levels of nitrite added. You may have to have more nitrite to prevent botulism if you don't have absolutely the most exquisite manufacturing methods so that you don't have a botulism risk. And it may mean that we get the nitrite levels reduced very substantially, and you're going to have to quit taking your hot dogs out at 10 o'clock in the morning and taking them off on a picnic and leaving them out until 6 o'clock in the evening with no refrigeration. There's no reason to treat meat that way, but we do. So we'll have to have an education campaign at the same time. Yes, ma'am. Well, I used to testify in favor of it in my earlier incarnation, and administration is supporting a study instead. I am a great supporter of cooperatives, and I can't think of anything that would be more beneficial. Well, I could think of some, but I think that encouraging consumer cooperatives would be a very wise thing to do. In my area I used to live in Washington, there were inner city area, five food stores in about a 7-block range. all of them on 7th Street, Southeast and Northeast. They were all Safeway stores. And they did not compete with one another as to price or quality of food. If you had a consumer cooperative come in there, you might generate a little competition. Nobody else, no retailer, profit-making retailer, will find it beneficial to come in there. There's no profit to be made in that area, or not a large one. But a consumer cooperative, which reinvests its profits in the membership, could probably do business there and serve the people better. So I'm a strong supporter of consumer cooperatives. Yes, ma'am. We have what's called the Expanded Food and Nutrition Education Program, known as FNAP, that operates out of the Extension Service and works on a one-on-one basis with food stamp recipients. So go in and see the family regularly, sometimes for as long as 18 months, and try to make basic changes in the way the family manages its food dollars and its nutritional needs. And it's very effective, but there are 17 million people on food stamps right now, and we are never going to get FNAP aids out to 17 million food stamp recipients. We're now going to use the mass media, I hope, in the next year much more effectively and much more extensively than we have in the past, and try to supplement that with some more information programs. It's time for me to go. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.